your attention, please.
So you roll out of bed in your underpants. You throw on a pair of jeans.
First of all,
put a hat
I don't
on.
Use the term underpants, and I'm wearing boxers to bed. You roll out of bed in your underpants. You think tidy whities, okay? That's the funniest thing. You are nuts. The underpants.
I'm sorry.
Why is that so funny? Wow.
I don't know. Wow.
Ignition sequence start. 3, 2, 1. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Here's Pete and Jane on 720 WGN.
Pete McMurray, Jane Monzuris, in for Patty in the Allstate Skyline Studios. That was at the end of the show last night.
Do not get me started. I'm starting to laugh again, crying, tears out of my eyes.
Underpants.
How are your underpants, Pete?
My least favorite word for a male.
I mean, we lost it. I don't know if we were delirious, we were tired, or we really think the word underpants.
I think everything.
You were in your underpants in bed.
That's the dumbest thing. Why is that so funny?
I love that we still are laughing about this.
Why is underpants so funny? It's been 24 hours and we're belly laughing again. It's so dumb. There's certain words.
It's just really dumb. I can't. I mean, it's the beginning of the show and I can't even speak because you're making me laugh over a silly little word.
You're the one that brought it up last night.
I sure did, didn't I? Because I'm picturing you jumping on a bed in your underpants, taking Charlie to the bus at 3 o'clock in the morning.
No. I do not have, I do
your
not
boxers,
own underpants, okay?
Stop it.
Do men still wear tidy whities?
Yes.
Do they?
Sure.
The white ones from Venture?
The interesting thing is they're no longer white. There are white ones on the market, but they have them in gray, and there's dark blue, navy, there's black.
Yeah.
So they're tidy colored undies. But yeah, of course. And then they wear the ones that are, they're tight, but they go down the leg. What are those?
Boxer briefs?
Correct.
Yeah.
Boxer briefs. That's
what I wear.
You wear the boxer briefs?
I do.
You don't wear boxers?
No. I do have, I wear
your
boxers
dad, I bet,
to
he wore boxers.
Bed.
You wear boxers to bed.
My dad wore white tidy whities. And it bothers me to this day. Oh my God, right when you said that, there is my dad in our hallway back in Peoria, standing there with his dress shirt on and his black socks and white tiny whities.
Yeah, Big Ed wore white tiny whities.
Yes.
Lou wore the boxers.
Remember, that was the 70s. I felt like everybody did.
I thought all the men wore boxers back then. Remember, boxers were trendy.
They were.
Boxers were trendy for girls in college. Do you remember girls at Bradley would walk around just wearing boxers with their like Sigma Chi on the back or something?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
That was sexy.
No, that's the worst. Whoever invented that as a trend, it was the worst thing ever.
Okay, let's say as a guy in college and there's a girl in front of you wearing boxers.
That says Sigma Chi on the butt or
fantastic.
Whatever.
Fantastic. Yes, absolutely. We loved it.
The back of those boxers, it looks terrible.
You're disgusted by the boxers on a hot woman, but you like the underpants.
I love the underpants. I mean, just think about everyone laying in bed right now in their underpants sleeping. It's a nice thought.
I don't know. What do people wear to bed nowadays?
I think they wear underpants.
Wow. Do people wear pajamas anymore?
PJs.
I wear pajamas.
You wear pajamas?
Yeah.
The long sleeve.
Okay, not the long
shirt
sleeve.
And the long sleeve,
no, like a tank
bottoms
and like sweatpants. Yeah,
but that's a tank and a sweatpants. Is a proper pajama set is real the real question.
Yeah, it's a proper pajama pants.
Okay, because
outfit,
you could,
I'd say
you could veer away from the proper PJs and then you're wearing a tank and sweatpants, and then it's not proper anymore. It's just comfy clothes.
I wear boxers,
underpants.
I wear Tommy John boxers to bed and a fan blowing on me.
Ugh. The
right
fan?
In my face.
Well, that's because you're wearing the sweater that you can never take
it's
off.
It's wonderful.
You got the sweater on, you got the boxers, and you got the fan.
I like to feel the fan on my right shoulder because it's to my right.
Really?
Oh, it feels so good.
Wow.
I love it.
I would hate that.
Oh,
it's wonderful. I don't even like the fan. I don't even like the overhead fan.
Oh, my God. What is it with women? My wife's the same way.
I put blankets upon blankets over me.
I don't get it. Yeah. She's always cold.
I don't know. Yeah. Because I think there's something comfortable about it.
You know what the worst is? It's not the winter time. It's the summertime when we go out to dinner and the air conditioning is cranked up. And you walk into a restaurant and you're freezing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the worst. I hate the summer when you have to bring a sweater because you're going in somewhere that it's so cold.
I have had this conversation with my wife 1 million times. Hey, should I bring a wrap to dinner? Yes.
Yes.
Now until the earth blows up, you always bring a jacket, bring your jean jacket, bring a wrap, bring whatever.
I'm nervous when you say now until the earth blows up because I've started using that phrase from you.
Okay.
And I say it to people. I'm like, we will be doing this now until the earth blows up.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, whatever we were doing ends. And I'm like, oh no, this is bad. Like, what did I just say?
What's going on here?
I think backwards. I'm like, oh boy. So I'm never going to use that again.
Are you ready for the big show tonight?
I'm ready for the big show.
We have Dr. Milan Mrkić.
Is he coming in his underpants?
He is coming in at 12:30
You're never
going
to let that go, Jane.
You know, Doc, you met him last year at Goombay Bash.
Such a great guy. I can't
wait
to see him. Yeah.
Think about it. You go to work every day and you try to find a cure for cancer.
And what do we do?
We talk about underpants.
Exactly.
That's what we do. There's a book out called Cool Guy's Guide, The Game of Romance.
Oh, I can't wait to talk to these
two. Have you looked at the book?
The experts is what I want to know.
Spencer Burnett, one of the authors, is a dating and relationship expert.
How is he an expert?
And Matthew McCahill is a player.
Ah, they got together and they wrote a book.
I'm sure Matthew came up with the idea. You know, I date a lot of women. I need an expert. I'm going to write this book.
This is how it starts.
Yeah.
The player and the expert walked into a bar. And then they came out with a book.
They wrote a book. Mm-hmm. The Cool Guy's Guide to the Game of Romance. They'll be in at midnight.
To talk to these
guys.
There
you go. Okay. You can take that.
Thank you.
It's
a nice picture.
And we're going to talk nutrition. We have a personal chef and...
Author
of a new book called Drizzle Kitchen Food Allergies. Is that right?
Drizzle Kitchen. Yeah, Kendra Peterson. Yeah. She's been on Living Healthy Chicago quite a few times.
I want to be her friend.
You should be her friend.
I do.
Not only is she pretty and energetic,
yes.
And she's smart, and she makes great food.
Okay.
And I think, too, the really interesting thing is when we talk about food allergies or maybe you have like an illness, like a not illness, but, you know, an aversion to something,
mm-hmm.
should have a way around it to still make a meal that's delicious.
Do you feel like people are more allergic to things nowadays, or are they just listening to their body now? Because I feel like in the past, growing up, I didn't know anyone that had a peanut allergy.
Right.
It seems like everybody has a peanut allergy.
Let's ask
Kendra. People. Okay.
Yeah, because I don't. You're right. I feel like you're right. When we were little, I didn't know anyone had a peanut allergy, but maybe we weren't paying attention, and the parents were just telling the teachers.
Or we didn't know about gluten.
Right. Like
this guy's got
celiac
gluten
disease. Yeah. A big deal back then.
Gluten allergy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, there's certain foods that I won't eat because it feels like there's a lead weight in my stomach.
Well, it's funny, too, because there are those foods that I can't eat because I get that lead weight, but I still eat them. And then after the fact, I'm like, oh, that's not good.
I have a tapeworm. I can't help it.
No, you don't.
We're going to check bottom of the hour news, and we'll bring in Kendra right after news. It's 720 WGN. Pete McMurray, Jane Manzouris in the Allstate Skyline Studios. In studio, I love when you bring your people because I want their cell phones right away.
And then you get jealous when I'm with those people and you're like, that's my people. Mm-hmm. And then you want to take over my people.
She is a personal chef. She is an author and a food allergy expert specializing in meal planning and helping people navigate the grocery aisles to make eating safe, nutritious, and fun for everyone. I love that right there.
Safe, nutritious, and fun for everyone. Well, I'll tell you the part I loved about it. Navigate the grocery aisles.
Like that.
Grocery store is my favorite place to be ever.
Her first cookbook is entitled Drizzle Kitchen Favorites, Happy Foods for Everybody and Every Allergy. It's Kendra Peterson. It's great to see you. Can I have your phone number?
He wants to be your friend.
It's good to see you too.
I was at the grocery store tonight and I went in hungry and I didn't have a plan. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do?
It's bad news bears right there.
Yeah, it is.
You're off to a bad start.
It is. It's terrible. People do this all the time, don't they?
I do it all the time.
And you just grab garbage.
What is wrong with me?
So when you go to the grocery store, what's the first rule of thumb? Well, besides having a plan, and don't go hungry.
I always start with produce. Start with produce. Fill your cart with the stuff that's good for you.
God, that's a great idea.
And then it's like a good reminder of what you should be eating that. And then you're not going to grab the package of cookies.
They say shop the perimeter of the grocery store so you avoid the aisles.
Yes. I mean, there's the majority of truth lies within that. But there's some good stuff in the middle of the aisles now. Like, think about beans. Rice, quinoa, that's all in the middle of the store too. So don't shun the middle of the store, but maybe don't buy like the frozen dinners that you just microwave.
I have produce on one side of my jewel and the other side is the liquor. So I'm working the aisles. I'm working the end aisles.
That's a win-win.
May is Food Allergy Awareness Month. Who knew?
It is. It's also Celiac Disease Awareness Month.
Okay, let's talk about that. Jane and I were talking about that before you came in. The peanut allergies and the gluten allergies, is that a new thing or they've always been around and we've just discovered it?
It's a little bit of both. They weren't necessarily as prevalent previously. And now the question that researchers are trying to figure out, why have they increased so much?
Right.
So you are right that, yes, there are more of them now. And actually, University of Chicago, there's some really great researchers down there doing a ton of good work. And they're trying to look at, there's two things that they're kind of pinpointing. One is our lack of fiber in our diet.
Really?
Mm-hmm. The other one is that we need more probiotics, which is part of what the fiber helps with.
Right.
Also increase antibiotics. Too many antibiotics.
Too many antibiotics taking. Yeah. We need to remove that from...
Right. So, which also relates back into the probiotics.
But if we take the probiotics, then we don't get sick, so we don't need antibiotics. And we eat more produce, then we don't get sick. Right. You know what they say, an apple a day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
I mean, you know, lots of different fruits.
A day. So let's talk about allergies. Let's talk about food allergies. Mm-hmm. You say that there's 8 different culprits that we're focusing on.
Well, yes, there's 8 that parlay into the 90%. The 90% of all food allergy reactions come from 8 foods.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. In the United States. Other countries, there's more.
Okay.
There's like 14.
We're actually trickling down that way, too.
Why? Yeah. Why is it different? Back to the probiotics.
I don't know. It might be different soil. It might be different cultures. Yeah, like probiotics, antibiotics, it's different things in different countries.
Can we guess the 8 foods?
Yeah, okay.
Do you know the 8 foods?
Well, Kendra and I talked about the 8 foods. So, Pete, you guess the 8 foods.
Peanuts?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to write these down while you're
talking. White flour? White sugar?
No.
Okay. Trying to think of everything that's bad for you. Chocolate.
Well, that's not necessarily going to cause an allergy.
No,
I know,
no.
I know.
Soy?
Yes.
Is soy? Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Soy is one of them?
Mm-hmm. What comes from a cow?
Oh.
Milk?
Oh, yeah. Dairy.
Dairy.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Okay.
Eggs?
That's 3.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is that part of dairy, though?
Eggs?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Food guide. Remember your old food guide pyramid?
Did I just say that out loud? Hope nobody heard me.
So white flour doesn't fit in that category.
Well, white flour is very specific. It's actually wheat.
Okay.
Oh,
wheat. Yes.
Wheat.
Okay. Got it.
Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Mm-hmm.
You got 3 more, Pete.
I just can't.
Things that come from water.
From water?
Yeah. What comes out of the water? What do you eat from the water? From the ocean?
Fish.
Yes.
Fish allergies?
Really?
Yes. What?
Oh,
really?
Yeah. Okay,
have you guys
ever
been out to dinner?
Yes.
yeah, I guess you're right.
You go out to dinner a lot. I do know this.
Yeah, yes. But also
fish, yes, of course.
Fish
like shellfish.
Shellfish.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So those are two.
Okay.
Oh, that's two.
That's two.
So there's
fish
one left.
Is, fish is one, shellfish is the other. Oh. So I know you mentioned peanuts.
Yes.
Which are actually technically a legume. It's actually not a nut. So nuts would be the other one.
Nuts.
Yeah.
So it's not peanuts. So it's a legume.
It is peanuts. Peanuts and tree nuts.
Oh, tree nuts. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tree nuts.
So do you have the list?
Yeah.
All right. Let's hear it again.
Okay. Let me tell you. Mm-hmm. Tree nuts. Peanuts, mm-hmm. soy, dairy, eggs, wheat, fish, shellfish.
Yes, that is correct.
Those are the eight culprits of 90% of food allergies. Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot of people, and in Canada, this parlays into their food top food allergens, corn, potato, and sesame. There's a big petition with the government right now with a lot of parents and doctors to try to get sesame also added to this, so it would be okay. Nine. There's a lot of kids. Sesame is almost like peanuts. Like it's really,
yeah,
really
yes, I can, yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
So talk about, okay, so we just named these eight food allergens that really make people go crazy. If they can't walk into a bar, if there's a peanut on the floor, bring their kids in there. Not that bringing
depending
their kids
Depending
on
in the your
bar.
Peanut allergy.
Oh.
Because there are different reactions.
Or you're going to a great dinner mm-hmm. and you got to be away from the shrimp because it's, you know, fish. So how can you eat deliciously if you're allergic to all eight of these things? Can you?
You totally can. Yeah. We've had some clients, actually. One of my first clients, they had a little girl, and she was allergic to these plus more. And they were like, we just want her to have a birthday cake. Like, we just want her to celebrate a birthday with a cake. And the first cake that they tried to make was terrible. And I was like, this is my life's mission, is to make a cake for this little girl. And you can do it. It just, we're so used to cooking a certain way. You
right.
know, find a recipe and you have your flour in the cupboard and this.
Yep.
You just have to cook differently. And you have to, like, expand your horizons. You know, it's get out of the Americana way of eating. Mm. Like, try other cultures' foods. You know, try different recipes and then cook real food. This is the problem in our country, too, is that we're very focused on convenience.
God, everything's
so
processed.
So focused on convenience.
You're right.
And reading, when you have all these food allergies, reading a label and trying to find something that's safe for you can
yeah.
be really tricky and stressful. And so eliminate that stress. Start cooking again. Because you know what doesn't cause an allergic reaction? Fruits, vegetables, real foods. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know what you're putting into it, then you can make totally safe meals that are delicious.
What about the foods that you eat that affect your body? I don't know if I'm allergic to certain foods, but there's things that I eat that affects my body that sit like a lead weight in my gut.
You might, well, so there's food allergies, which is one realm,
right.
which is an autoimmune response.
Yep.
And then you have food sensitivities,
okay.
which a lot of people have.
Yes.
And it can feel like an allergy because your reaction is awful,
mm-hmm.
but it's not an internal reaction necessarily. You're not going to die from it like you would a food allergy, but it might feel like there's a lead brick in your stomach, or you might get headaches, or you might have a rash, or you could just be eating foods that are inflammatory for your body.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that affect your body.
Mm-hmm. So in that case, when you get the lead, you know, feel like you have a lead weight in your stomach yeah. after you eat whatever, listen to your body and don't eat it, or just deal with the consequences.
It's kind of true. Like, I have a dairy allergy, and I really, really love cheese.
So you eat the cheese?
Well, I eat hard cheese because the protein has already started to unwind through the aging process, so it's not as hard on your body. So I have little tricks around it, but it's not a debilitating allergy for me, so I know how to navigate it.
What about the people out there? It seems like it's cool nowadays to go gluten-free.
Oh, I was just going to ask.
I'm gluten-free.
Gluten-free is not a diet.
No. Can't
do it. No.
God, it's not. And I'm so happy that we're kind of past that curve.
Yeah.
You know, it was like the big thing in L.A. Everyone was gluten-free. And like, you weren't cool unless you were gluten-free at a restaurant. And I think people realized once they started actually gaining weight after they ate a bag of gluten-free pretzels,
right.
like, oh my God, this might not be the best thing. So
why is that? Just because they used other processed food inside in place of?
Yeah, I mean, if you're typically when you're eating a food that is meant to replace the original version of it, they have to add stuff to it to
yeah.
make it taste the same way. So I think people psychologically were like, I'm going to eat healthier on my gluten-free diet, which means I can eat the whole box of gluten-free cookies.
That is so true.
You can't. You can still only have a portion of those cookies. And now you're eating probably way more sugar because they need to add that to make up for the
can
flavor.
Can you talk to my wife? I have this conversation, this exact conversation.
Yeah.
Sarah's like, I got gluten-free cookies. Eat as many as you want.
Mm-mm.
I go, "That no, Mm-mm. it doesn't work that way.
No.
Look at the label.
If
if you and by the way, sugar is the devil, isn't it?
Sugar can be real, real bad. I'm a big proponent of honey because it's a prebiotic.
Okay.
So honey actually helps the probiotics work in your belly. But don't, like, you know, pour a pound of honey in your coffee. Or your
moderation,
tea.
Jane.
Everything in moderation. Wow. Yeah. You know, it's funny. So living healthy in Chicago, you would think I would remember all of these things that I've learned over the last couple of years, and I don't. I'm like, oh, gluten-free crackers, I'll eat those. Like, let me just put some brown sugar in my coffee.
It doesn't work that way.
I just do exactly the opposite of what everybody says.
Kendra Peterson is in studio with us. Where can they get your book? Available on Amazon?
It sure is.
Okay.
They can go to my website, they can go to Amazon.
What is your website?
DrizzleKitchen.com.
DrizzleKitchen.com. I'm going to take a break, and we're going to talk about how to give us some tricks at the grocery store.
Yeah.
And how to maneuver through the grocery store.
You bet.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. It's 720 WGN. 720 WGN. If you have a question for our guest, 312-981-7200. We're getting some great text messages. Kendra Peterson in studio. She's a personal chef, author, and food allergy expert. May is Food Allergy Awareness Month. Drizzle Kitchen favorites. Happy foods for everybody and every allergy. Available now at Amazon. And your website is Drizzle...
DrizzleKitchen.com.
DrizzleKitchen.com.
How prevalent are food allergies or sensitivities? Like, can you give me a percentage of the population that's going to be allergic to something?
Sensitivities, I don't know the number on that, but for food allergy, 32 million Americans.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. 32 million.
Wow.
1 in 10 adults, 1 in 13 kids.
1 in 10 adults.
So mm-hmm. when we're out at a
that's
restaurant,
a lot.
And you look around a restaurant that seats 40, mm-hmm. there's 4 people in there that have a severe allergy.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So are you able then to, I mean, it's hard to speak through it because I don't have a food allergy, right? So I'll go out and order whatever I want.
Right.
But you have a food allergy.
Yeah.
And you go out to dinner a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. In our house, it's gluten and peanuts.
Wow. So mm-hmm. what do you do when you go out to dinner?
It's easy. It's about communicating with the, first of all, it's about knowing what restaurants are safe to eat at.
Right.
Like, we don't go to Chinatown. You know, yeah. it's just no, don't be dumb. Like, know where you're going to be successful.
Yep.
Right.
But we go to restaurants that either have a dedicated peanut-free menu, like La Colonial, we go there quite a bit. They have a peanut-free menu, which you wouldn't think from a Vietnamese restaurant. So people
great
are
restaurant.
Really a great restaurant.
Taking my wife there on Mother's Day.
Oh, it's so delicious.
And, yeah. and nowadays, I think that the movement of being sensitive to somebody's food allergy is so prevalent that these chefs and restaurants will say, we are an allergy-friendly restaurant. We have no peanuts, or we have right. gluten-free options mm-hmm. if you have celiac, or we, you know, they'll cater to the needs. And I think more and more people are not nervous to say, I can't eat
right.
an egg. Granted, you don't have to tell the whole table. You can pull your server down. But a lot of times they'll ask.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Right. The server sometimes will ask. But if you have a food allergy, I truly believe it falls on your shoulders. Unfortunately, you are responsible for your body. You're responsible for your life. And so you need to make sure that you are telling them.
We got to bang through these questions.
Okay, yeah, do
okay?
it. Yes.
Text message question from 630. What's the best way to get probiotics, or what are the best out there? Because there's thousands.
There are. There
any really idea?
Are. That's something that you definitely need to talk to your doctor about. There's so much varying research on
right.
it. And the
higher the billions, is yeah, that right? 42
yeah.
billion?
Yeah, and I mean, general rule of thumb is...
You can never be high enough for me.
The more expensive, usually the better they are.
But can you take them supplements, or do you get them through food?
Both.
You say both all the time, or can I just, if I don't have the food, can I eat the supplement?
What kind of food yeah. is a probiotic?
Well, this is tricky.
Kimchi.
There's also, yes, kimchi.
I don't even know what that is.
This.
I think I dated her in college.
Kimchi what? Is so delicious. You can mm-hmm. chop it up and put it with your
guacamole.
I have no idea what you two are talking
Go
about.
Go to the grocery store and buy kimchi. Chop it up, put it with an avocado, and then it is so
delicious. I
wouldn't
so even know delicious. Where to go. I'm going to have to ask someone.
They're fermented vegetables.
Yeah. So anything fermented
yes.
is...
So, like sauerkraut
probiotic. Yeah.
that's in the refrigerator,
okay.
pickles that are in the refrigerator.
That's
nothing can be
probiotic.
Shelf stable because it's killed off the good bacteria.
312-981-7200. Joe, you're on with Kendra Peterson. What's your question?
Hey, Kendra. I love shellfish, oysters, clams, so forth and so on, but it sometimes triggers a little bit of a gout experience with me. I've got pills for that, but is there any of Mother Nature's foods that would counter it also?
Any foods that would counter that? Not that I can think of necessarily. I mean, I feel like if it's a food reaction, it's probably something that you either need to avoid or you need to stick with those pills.
Listen to your body.
Yeah.
Listen to your body.
Yeah.
Before the break, we teased about a grocery store, tricks at the grocery store. Can you give us some tricks and how to maneuver through the grocery store?
I think for anyone, whether you have a food allergy or not, you just want to eat healthy, find brands that you trust if you're going to use packaged products.
Okay.
So you know you can always go to them.
Right.
Like if you have a favorite tortilla chip that's maybe made with beans instead of all corn to make it healthier, you know, just always know you can grab that. Make a list. Make a list. I have a plan. Notebook that I always take with me. And literally the guys at the meat counter were like, oh, it's the notebook lady. I'm like, no.
Why do you carry a notebook? Why don't you put it in the notes section on your phone?
I'm 170 and I like paper. I like paper. I want to write things down.
How about a Doc?
I can share it with the family. No.
You won't do that.
I can't. I'm a tactile, creative individual. I need to write things down.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I just go and just start ordering things and then I start cooking when I get home.
I think you'll find your grocery bill will also be cheaper.
Oh, if you write the list.
If you make your list.
I think the other thing I want to talk about, there are a lot of new brands that are out there, right? Mm-hmm. So I cook like I live in the 1970s. So I just go to the old standbys. But there's so many new brands that I'm also leery. I'm like, I don't trust this brand. I don't know them. But do I do research or do I just read the labels?
You mean from like an ingredient standpoint or
I don't know, like where is it made? Product. Yeah, the food product. Is it good? Is it, you know, safe? Like, how do I know that these new brands are something that I can rely on and that I really like? Or is it trial and error?
I mean, some of it's trial and error from a flavor standpoint. From a safety standpoint, I think it depends on what you're looking for. Do you want something that's GMO free? Do you want something that's pesticide free? Do you want something that's organic?
That would be on the label, right?
Not always. I mean, really? Well, GMO verified project, that will you'll always see that. It's like the little butterfly and there's a check.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that it's glyphosate free. So there's all these little like layers of things that are still kind of missing. So if there are topics like that that are important to you,
right,
then you need to research the brands and find out, do they spray their crops or do they use organic seeds or that kind of stuff.
And is that information readily available probably on these brand websites?
It should be. If the brand is open about,
look at her face. She's weary about. They may.
I think the
omit
brands
a few
that
things.
Probably don't spray their crops are pretty open about not spraying their crops.
Right.
Yeah. So basically, we need to cook from scratch.
I'm the biggest proponent of cooking from scratch.
It's interesting what you said at the beginning of this interview because I went to the store and you said, go to the produce first if you don't have a plan. That's such a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It really is.
Even in my refrigerator, and I tell my clients this all the time too, I'm like, keep cut fruits and vegetables in a glass container.
Because you can see them.
You see them. And when you see them, you are for sure, it's scientifically proven, you will eat more of them.
That's why I always buy beer in bottles, so you can see it.
Dark
and
bottles.
You open the refrigerator
there
and
it is.
Grab it.
Smart.
Kendra, I need your phone number. Thank you so much.
Oh, jeez, Kendra. Watch what you
personal
sign up for.
Personal chef, yes. Author and food allergy expert. It's great to see you.
Nice to see you,
We'll
too.
Have you back. You were great.
Thanks, guys.
And again, give the website where people can grab the book.
Sure. Drizzlekitchen.com. You can also grab it on Amazon.
It's a great cookbook. A lot of good recipes.
Thanks.
I'm assuming that I'll get one in the mail.
Oh, boy.
I mean, obviously.
Right. I love it.
When you order it from Amazon.
It's 720 WGN. Coming up after the top of the hour, news from the Northwestern Medical Newsroom. We will have the authors of The Cool Guy's Guide, The Game of Romance. I noticed that you've been
flipping through the book. Well, there's a
learning
cool
a
guy.
Few things.
Yeah, little tips and tricks of The Game of Romance.
Right.
I'm wondering what I missed.
I know you look at me and say, Pete, you know everything there is to know about relationships.
You're the
and
Michael
I do.
Jordan of romance.
I was the Michael
the
Jordan
rumor
of
is
kissing.
On the street.
Yes, yes. Apparently.
That's what you tell everybody.
I know. My wife, I won't even go there. WGN, Pete McMurray, Jane Monzuris in the Allstate Skyline Studios. There's a lot of guys listening right now that want to be in relationships.
They want to find love.
They want to find love. The book is entitled The Cool Guy's Guide, The Game of Romance. Let's welcome in the authors, Matthew McCahill and Spencer Burnett. It's good to see you guys. Thanks for coming in so late.
Thanks for having us.
Fellas,
it's great to be here.
This is exciting. I can't wait to dig into the guy's mind.
Now, Spencer, you're a dating and relationship expert.
Yes.
What makes you an expert?
You know, I was raised by two amazing parents. And so I did not go to college for it, but I have spent 36 years watching an amazing example.
Okay.
I thought it was the hair.
Yeah, that's part
the
of it.
The hair is great,
I got
too.
That from my parents, too.
You have unbelievable hair.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, Jane, he's got great hair.
You got great hair.
You really do.
Well, and you got great parents.
Right, yeah.
I love that.
And Matthew, you're a player.
You got great hair,
too.
Or
you used to be a player.
I'm reformed, absolutely.
Yes. You've got great hair, and you're a reformed player.
I was, I think I'm very typical in the guy's world of, you know, I got burned early on and got bitter and then just went into this, you know, lay of the land, so to speak.
So now there's two different types of guys that are single. There's the player that's going out and looking for one night stands, but there's a guy that dates around.
Right.
Which I think is fine.
Yeah, sure.
But sometimes he's considered a player, which is wrong.
Well, I mean, you're right. There's two different types of players. And the guy that is the player that's looking for the one-night stand, he's usually pretty jaded, like Matt was talking about. But the guy that's dating around, what I found, especially like in the past few years, is those guys are actually looking for relationships. And when they find the woman that they finally like, they blow it.
Right.
And that is why we wrote this book.
Yep.
Yeah.
So say that again. When they finally find the woman, they don't know what to do, and so they blow it.
Yep.
And then she's gone.
Well, I feel like this book is going to be the book that more ex-boyfriends are going to get than any other book this year. Right? This
Who's going to buy it for him? The
ex-girlfriend's going to buy it for him.
She's going to say, listen, you missed out.
This is what you could have done.
Can you change behavior? Is what I want to know. So from a player perspective, can you change, if you read this book, and I'm going to, you go to the book, you're like, okay, make her a little care package, right? Or whatever section you're in, and you're dating somebody, can you change the behavior and learn it?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And that's the thing. It's like so many guys want something new, but they don't do anything different. And so that's the problem is they feel like they can't learn it. But there is a process to getting into a relationship. And we break it down into five different phases. So you don't run a little bit too hot, or you move in with the girl that you finally liked, within the first 2 weeks.
What's the rush?
Right. But you also don't go too slow. Yeah.
So then that's a good point there, too, because a lot of times they say don't jump in, don't go on a date every night for the first 14 days of your relationship, because you're going to blow it because it's too much away.
And that's part of you have to continue playing the game. So that's why it's a book not for just players. It's a book for guys, the regular guys. Right.
Yeah.
Cool. It could have been the nice guys guide, but that wouldn't have been as cool. Right. So
it's really just for
the guys that are normal. They don't have a hard time meeting girls and talking to girls. They're looking for some extra tips and some extra guidance to get to that next level. Right. I've had girls where when I was a player, and I would be dating, and I'm like, oh my God, this girl is just the girl I want to meet. Just the girl I've wanted to meet. And then I drop my wall. And all of a sudden, I blow it.
You can't.
Because I turned into a nice guy.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you say that, because it's always a game at the beginning. Even if she's the one, it's always a game at the beginning.
It has to be.
Absolutely. Every species has their mating dance,
Right.
Yeah. And once you understand how it works between humans,
right.
Then you can start to understand it better and start showing up and building that relationship with a strong foundation.
I feel like I can go on tour with these guys. I mean, I speak this language.
Let's do it.
You could be the host. You could be the moderator.
Like he can talk about the kissing.
Yeah, boy, the Michael Jordan of kissing.
Thank you, guys.
Do you think, though, a little bit it's about timing? So we always say, when I was out in the dating world, we would say, is there cab light on? So you're out and you see a guy, you're like, oh, I think I like this guy. He's so cool. It's nice.
Yep.
If his cab light is on, that means that maybe he's available to date. If his cab light's off, it doesn't matter how nice he is to you, how pretty he is, whatever. His cab light is off. He is not ready to date anyone seriously because of timing.
Yeah. You've got to find not only the right person, but the right person at the right time in their life.
That's so hard.
It's really hard.
But there's also the women that are marrying men young and quick, right? They have an agenda. and they're putting it out there in the world of what they want.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying, I want to get married. I'm not looking to be your girlfriend for 5-10 years. And they're telling him. And the guy's listening, and he wants to please. You know, he's in love. He wants to be that guy. And this is the same thing that guys need to do, and we don't do often enough. We don't express what we're looking for and what we want.
Do you tell guys never, ever, ever, ever get engaged in the infatuation stage? Which is usually the first 90 days or could be the first 6 months.
Yeah, in the book, we actually talk about the first year. That's what the book is about, is the first year in the relationship. And it's really important to see someone through all of the seasons, you know, not just, you know, spring,
sure,
summer and all
absolutely.
That, but like what they're like around their family, around their friends. What are they like in a stressful situation? Because a good relationship isn't just one of which you get along. It's a good relationship is where you learn how to not get along together. And that takes some time to reveal, because it's easy to fake in the first 90 days,
yeah,
right? Everyone can be on good
you're
behavior.
You're still in that dance. You're still in the game phase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. How about a trip together? I mean,
you really
learn about a person.
You do,
when
but
you take a
but
trip.
That's also you've got this girl that, you know, maybe she's just a level up from you. That's going to take her away from you. That's going to pull her away sometimes, right? You know, maybe the girl that works at the bar would love to have that free trip to Jamaica, right? But this is the girl that you're looking to really get into a long life with. And sometimes when you do that, it has misrepresentation of what you're looking for and what you're really doing.
So, Matthew, are you married?
I am married, yeah.
How many years?
So it works.
Yeah, I'm on my 8th year of marriage.
Wow.
And,
I thought you were going to say I'm on my 8th marriage. Your 8th year of marriage. Okay.
8 times got it right. No, that's, yeah. First marriage.
When you told your wife that you were writing this book about dating, what did she say?
Well, at first, I started it with, I'm writing this book and I don't want you to ever read it. And so the curiosity caught the cat many times.
Of
right?
course.
So she, you know, it's almost if I didn't say anything, she wouldn't want to get involved. But she was, you know.
She's like, you did this to me and you did this and you did this and you did this. Whoa, I just opened up to a page. I don't think I can say that out loud.
Oh, yeah, you got to be careful. Matthew McCahill and Spencer Burnett. The Cool Guy's Guide, The Game of Romance is the name of the book. Biggest mistake guys make in the first year. What is it?
Oh, man. I mean, there's a lot of mistakes that guys make in the first year.
They're going to make them regardless, by the way. There's something the book's going to save for the mistakes.
Right.
It's how you turn them into wins.
And that's exactly what it is running away from those mistakes. A lot of times when you have the nature of a player and something goes wrong, you tend to go with what works, which is finding a new girl. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's how you manage those mistakes, how you communicate, how you come back from, you know, the loss of, you know, maybe not playing your cards right and getting back into sync with her. Because, again, that's representative of a real relationship. Like, stuff is going to go wrong.
Right.
Talk about being living in the downtown area city as opposed to the suburbs or as opposed to even further out. Do you feel like dating in the city, it is all about, it's a player's game because everyone's out, they're all running around River North, you got Tinder, you're swiping left, you're going to this place, and maybe somewhere in a smaller town or out in the burbs, it's not the same. Or you see players everywhere and people not doing the right things to meet the one they want to love.
I lived on the Big Island of Hawaii for many years, and so I've been in the most desolate areas of life, and I've been in the biggest cities in the country, right? So it doesn't matter. There's the same love and everything else. You probably have callers right now that are thinking to themselves, you know, I need to call them because I want to find out why my husband's not home or why my boyfriend's not home right now, right? And then you've got guys that are also probably want to know, you know, well, why am I not connecting with all these girls? What's the thing? But and I'd love to hear from anybody that has a story.
So it's not about living in a bubble. I'll tell you guys an example. I have a fiance. When we first started dating, we would go out on dates every Tuesday. And so my family started calling him Tuesday Night Kurt, and they didn't even know about him for maybe 6 months into us dating. We went out on Tuesdays, and my girlfriends were like, do you know who guys on that you date on Tuesdays, what they're doing on the weekends? They go home to their wives and their families. I'm like, what? You know, and so this was a thing. But turns out there wasn't a wife and a family on the weekends, and he didn't live in another city. But it was because...
He wasn't a pilot.
Correct. That's interesting. No, but we went out and we picked a date and it was our Tuesdays and that's what we did because we kept it slow and it worked out fine. But
that's actually very healthy.
You think so?
Yeah, because you got to look forward to Tuesdays, right?
It was a great break in the week.
Yeah, but he needs to also change it up a little bit once in a while. Right, because then
he would plan spectacular dates. It was like we went out.
I hate this guy. I love him, but I hate him. He's a good-looking man, and he does everything right. And I want to punch him in the stomach every time I see him.
But it was he always planned a Tuesday night date, and to me, it was very special. And I looked forward to it. And we would go. It wasn't fancy restaurants. It was restaurants like all over the crevices of the city. Like anywhere we would find, he'd be like, "Oh, I found this really cool," and we would go have this experience together. So, is that in your book? It should be. I think it is.
There is, yeah. There's all types of tips in there for all types of walks of life. Because every girl has an individual way they want to have the relationship, right? And every guy has the same thought process, too. He wants to have a certain way. And so the tips either steer you one way or another, depending on what type you are, right? Because there's super alpha guys, and then there's little bit guys that are just the nice guys, right?
Yeah, something that would fit someone, like they're sort of they're who they are.
And a lot of people are going to say, that guy doesn't exist, right? I can tell you that for our book signing we did at the Godfrey Hotel last month, and a guy, really good looking guy in his 30s, he's like, I came because I have a lot of money and I'm just the nice guy and I cannot for the life of me get engaged. And he was like, this is exactly what I needed.
Wow.
And we spent about 20 minutes together, and it was really just that emotional bonding of men of where we're like, so many guys are talking about the girl last night, but there's a lot of guys nowadays, they're talking about the girl next door, the girl coming up in the future, right?
Sure. So guys need to be coached.
Yeah,
your follow-up book is about married guys because they drop the ball everywhere.
Well, I'm telling you, especially for that.
Especially with Mother's Day coming up.
I think this could last into marriage too because you got to do the same. You still got to date when you're married.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the number one mistake guys make in like the second year is they forget to continually date their woman. And you've got to chase her like you've never had her before, even though she sleeps in the same bed as you. And we forget that so much. And in this book, not only is it tips from mine and Matt's experiences, but it's also meant to inspire guys to come up with their own stuff. You know, it's supposed to provoke creativity, so you're putting that effort into the relationship, and it doesn't have to be a grandiose idea.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, being a kid watching my parents and literally they would turn everything into a date. Like, it's like, oh, you want to walk around the block, go on a date, a grocery store date, and they just referred to everything as a
date.
To keep on in the forefront of their mind is like, hey, we are romantic partners.
I love that.
Right. So we didn't have a lot of money though. So
it's interesting that you say that, Spencer, because we do that. I do that with my wife. Oh, I got a date walking the dog.
Yeah.
And my son hears that and it processes with him. So, it's learned behavior. It really is.
Yeah, you are being a great example to your son. And that is the number one thing that is wrong in the culture is we don't have a model. Men don't have a model of what a good man looks like. And even more so, women don't have a good model of how a man should treat them. And that's why this book is so great.
Jane has her arms in the air.
So they have a good model.
Thank you. I love that.
I've been married 18 years. And I said to my wife, I think it was last week. And I said, hey, we need to go out. And she goes, you need to ask me on a date. And I paused for a second. Yeah. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
You got me. Yeah. Because we forget that. 18 years I've been married and you forget.
Yeah.
You do. You've got to give them something to look forward to.
Right. Right?
It's part of boringness, right?
Yeah. Let me take a quick break and we'll discuss some more. How about three tips to guys listening right now? We'll come back, give them three takeaways, some ideas for romance.
All right, when we come back.
That's the teaser. The Cool Guys Guide, The Game of Romance. They can get this anywhere, Amazon?
I love it.
They can go to thecoolguysguide.com and get the book there.
Love it.
First chapter is on the website. They can read it before they buy it.
Oh, fantastic.
I love that.
All right. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Matthew McCahill and Spencer Burnett in studio. That is nice. The book is entitled The Cool Guy's Guide, The Game of Romance. Matthew McCahill and Spencer Burnett in studio. All right. Let's give the guys some tips that need help. What can you do? What can you tell us?
I would say my first tip is don't be boring. Right? why there's so many tips in this book. It's to inspire you, to get you to do something that's a little different. Stand out from the crowd is a whole chapter in our book, right?
And in the chapter, and this is not meant in any sort of mean way, but some people are just boring. right? It's not in their nature to do something that's not boring. However, my question is, in their, you know, whatever their personality is, they can find something that's not boring that may, you know, maybe it's just fits with what he's doing with the girl. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
not at all.
That may, no, it makes sense. And some people are, you know, naturally not as charismatic and fun.
Correct.
But that's like saying some people are lazy.
Right.
You know, you can fix that by working hard, you know. And so the same thing with being boring. You can fix that by being creative. And everyone has something inside of them that somebody loves.
Yes.
Right. Right?
That's
the people
what
that
I
know
say.
You love you.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for that. So if you can learn how to kind of wear that as your skin all the time, as opposed to like keeping it in or being shy or just being lazy, that's the way to kind of step out and start putting in some effort.
So not necessarily they're boring, it's just that there's something for everyone, and someone else's, what I'm going to add to this relationship may be different than this relationship.
Yeah, absolutely.
How about notes? I'm a big note guy. I'll leave a note in my wife's car. Tuesday, she had a huge presentation. I put a note on her front seat.
Yeah.
So when she got in the car to go to work, she saw the notes.
Yeah. I wrote a note on the bathroom wall when I was just starting to date this girl. And of course, it backfired on me because she thought another girl wrote it when I knew the shower was going to steam up and then she would see it. And she's like, some girl wrote on your wall in your mirror. And I'm like, no, that was for you.
Wow.
You know, the thing on taking notes. You know, one of the tips that I give guys is demonstrate that you're thinking about her when she's not around. Okay. So one of the things that I do, I actually did it today when I went grocery shopping. I just bought some flowers and Trader Joe's has these elote chips. I don't know if you guys have ever tried them. They're amazing. And I just surprised my girlfriend with them. Another thing too is leaving notes. So I'll leave a note in my girlfriend's pants pocket. So like, and so while they're in the dresser, you know, or hanging up. So whenever she decides to wear those pants, like it might be a month from now, you know, it might be a couple weeks from now, she'll just find that to know that I was thinking about her when she wasn't around.
And you know, that just makes you go, oh, look at that.
Does she appreciate it?
Oh yes. My God, yeah.
How long have you been dating her?
A year and a half.
Okay.
So is she
are
the
you,
one?
Are you writing your?
Oh yeah,
Matthew, are you writing your wife notes?
Oh yeah, I do either a note, but I don't have good handwriting, so I'll usually do something more like something that she likes. Like she loves sugar cookies, so I'll get a big smiley face sugar cookie and leave it in the front of her car, so that when she gets into her car, she sees that.
Those little sweet things are so nice. Kurt used to bring me, we call it the chip. It was just a gigantic chocolate chip cookie. But when we were dating, we didn't live together, and he would come over. He would bring me a chip. And he was like, I have to rush home and get you a chip before the store closes. Mm-hmm. Finally, I was like, dude, you're making me fat, so no more chips.
You got to cut it out.
See, but that's one of the great things about, you know, us as guys. If we're all talking and we're commemorating these things, you just reminded me of something that I did probably 6 years ago.
Right.
So I'm going to do it again in this next couple of weeks here just because it was a good reminder.
Right.
And that's what we got to do. We got to remind each other and talk about it.
What about advice for women?
Well,
don't be so hard on your guy.
No, I mean, can we read this book? Will we get something out of it?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a gold mine of information for getting inside the mind of a good man's head. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, what it looks like to be a good man so you can know how to qualify a good man. You know, the first book that I ever read about relationships was a book written by a woman for women, so I can better understand that. Instead of reading a book, you know, about how guys do things, I wanted to hear how women did it. Because whenever you know your audience, you know, then you can,
right,
you can, you know, speak to them in a way that they really understand. And so we wrote this book for men, but with women in mind.
There was something on page 93 that hit home with me. I have 7 brothers, and I go out with my brothers a lot. So my wife said to me one time, maybe I should go out with you guys. So you have invite her out on a guy's night on page 93.
Yeah,
I invited her out, and that was the last time she went out with us.
Good.
Like, okay, you're going to have your guy time. I don't need to see it anymore.
Yeah, rather than keeping it from her.
Right, because we don't do anything. We just sit around and talk smack and laugh at each other.
Yeah,
that's it. Well,
it's an interesting thing because you guys go out on the guy weekends, and in the beginning we're like, what are they doing? I want to go. I want to see it. And then now I just realize, I'm like, you know what? You're a happier guy. You love it. Go do your thing. And I get a little time alone. I can watch all my favorite shows.
Guys
stay up
guy
late,
time.
Drink wine. It's fine.
It's, yeah. it's important to miss each other.
Yeah.
You know, especially when we get in that infatuation stage, we want to spend all of our time together. And it's so important to create that distance, not only so you have time to miss each other, but so you can live your own life and then bring that back together when you guys, you know, meet up next and share the personal experiences that you have instead of being able to constantly finish each other's sentences.
630 area code, first year, no truer word. I propose 1 year to the day, now getting divorced.
Oh boy.
Yeah, you can't do that. Don't get engaged in the infatuation stage.
Can you guys go on a speaking tour? I think that'd be great.
Oh, yes. I mean, I was just in California. Mm-hmm. I was just in California doing a bunch of podcasts. Next week, I go to San Antonio and Dallas. So we're getting the word out there.
That's good.
The Cool Guys Guide, The Game of Romance. What's the website again?
CoolGuysGuide.com.
That's easy. Guys, thanks for coming in. Good to see you.
Great
to
have you.
Continued success with the book.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
All right. News is next at 720 WGN. I got 720 WGN, Pete and Jane in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We all unfortunately have a cancer story.
We do.
Everybody has a cancer story. That's why I got involved with a charity called the HFoundation.org. Got you involved. We hosted Goombay Bash last year at Navy Pier.
An amazing event. How many people were there? About
600, 700, 800
yeah,
people.
I
don't know. Let's ask Doc. Doc, how many people were there? Do you know?
I think it was right at 1,000 people.
Yeah.
1,000 people
in
at Navy Pier.
In the ballroom at Navy Pier, spilling out all sides, all there for a great cause.
And we just had another event called Comedy for Cancer in Downers Grove for the HFoundation.org. And joining us in studio is Dr. Milan Mrkcic. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you, Pete.
The H Foundation, first of all, do we want to explain to people what it is? It's a bunch of guys that got together and formed this foundation to give money back to research for cancer.
Yeah, it's a group of small business people in the western suburbs. And like all of us, they've been touched by cancer that's afflicted their good friends. And there was a woman at one company that didn't survive. And the guys got together and decided they really wanted to do something that could help future cancer patients and make them survivors. And so they started the H Foundation. They've partnered with Northwestern's Cancer Center, the Lurie Comprehensive Cancer Center.
Sure.
And they really provide, they raise a lot of money. They raise a lot of passion for cancer.
Right.
They really extend our friend network. And they've made it possible for us to work on some really new cutting edge cures.
So the interesting thing is there are oncologists, which you are not. There are researchers, which you are.
Exactly. So what's exciting at the Cancer Center, and Northwestern's is one of the top centers in the country, really. We bring together medical students, researchers, PhD scientists and engineers developing the technologies, and our oncologists who are right there seeing the patients, and we work as teams.
That's great.
When we're developing the next therapies, the next imaging modalities that we use for early detection, researchers can't develop those without really understanding what the needs are.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cancer Center is really magical in bringing us together and letting us all put our best effort forward and make a difference.
I can't imagine. How often do you hear about a rare form of cancer that you've never heard about before?
Almost every day. When you think about it, we see the really hard cases.
Right. Of course you do.
Yeah.
Because the cases that we know how to treat, people come in, they get diagnosed, and they're really lucky that they've got a treatable form of cancer. We spend our time thinking about the hard cases, the ones that we don't have good treatments for yet. So every day, Pete.
Pancreatic cancer. How come they can't find a way to detect that? Early detection.
I'll tell you, there are a few cancers. Pancreatic is one.
Ovarian cancer?
Ovarian, glioblastoma, brain cancer, still a really challenging one. And every cancer is different. The way I like to say it is, what happens in cancer is our cells lose the ability to stop growing. So if you think about it, if you cut your skin, cells have to start growing and dividing right at the cut until they fill up the wound.
Right.
And then they have to know it's time to stop growing. You filled up the gap. In cancer, cells lose that ability to stop growing. And cancer is basically uncontrolled cell growth. And it keeps growing and it takes over healthy tissue. There are all kinds of reasons cells can break and stop or lose the ability to stop growing. And that means 10 people can have liver cancer, but they can have it for different reasons, and the treatments for each of them might be different.
God, wow. I mean, thousands of ways that you could treat different types of cancer.
And it's always different. And that's an interesting thing. The cells don't regenerate differently in different people. And so my question to you is, why is there so much cancer? It sounds very elementary, right? So we've had cancer forever. I think we hear about it more because media is bigger, technology is bigger, social media, we're talking about it. There's events and there's awareness things and research. But why is there so much cancer? Is it because it's so different?
You know, there's a few reasons. One is over time, as our lifespans increase, we're more likely to get cancer. Cancer oftentimes stems from mutations that accumulate. Sunlight is one of the causes of mutations. Things like smoking, carcinogens, different kinds of pollutants in the environment. And it's not like you walk outside one day, you're in the sun, and you get cancer. It's really over a long period of time, the more exposure you have, the greater at risk you are. And so as people have lived longer, they get to an age where they're then more likely to get cancer. As we've gotten better at curing other diseases, you know, heart disease and cardiovascular disease is still a real problem, but less of one than it was 20 years ago. And so people live a little longer, and then cancer becomes more
right,
of a threat.
Right. Dr. Milan Mrkcic from Northwestern Hospital is here. Lurie's Cancer Center at Northwestern University. Isn't that right?
Exactly.
Yes.
So at the Feinberg School of Medicine, the downtown campus, the medical campus, and that's where the Lurie Cancer Center is housed.
So you go to work every day and you're exposed to different types of cancer, what causes cancer. Do you watch what you eat? Because when I think to myself, if I eat this, I wonder what's going to happen down the road. Or if I'm exposed to this, or my wife is worried about skin cancer, things like that. Does your mind work like that?
You know, in some sense it does. I think I've just always tried to be smart about exercise, about diet. Sunlight and other things. I'm not perfect. None of us are. Mm-hmm. It's hard. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we all try our best.
And when you talk about mutations, cancer can be genetic. So they say breast cancer, if you have the family history of it, or ovarian cancer or prostate cancer, but not all cancers are genetic.
That's right. So if you think about skin cancers, those are most commonly caused by sunlight, too much sunlight, burning, et cetera. And that has a strong environmental component, just what we go through. Other cancers have a strong genetic component, and the example of breast cancer is a really good example there. And then a lot of cancers, there's a component of both. You may have a genetic disposition to have an increased risk of cancer, but it doesn't guarantee you'll get cancer at some point. It just means you're more likely to. And that's one of the frustrating things that we deal with, that, you know, people in principle could get screened more routinely and catch it early. And the best thing you could do for cancer is early detection.
Right.
It's always easier to treat at stage one early than later.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. I do a lot of work with brain disease, right? So the Parkinson's and Movement Advisory Council at Northwestern, we meet all the researchers. We talk to the researchers about what they're doing to find a cure for degenerative brain disease. They're not, you know, I don't know if they're close. I don't know where they're at. It's hard to understand. But from a cancer perspective, is there promise to show a way to cure it?
Yeah. So it, you know, when we see the progress we've made in the past 20, 30 years, it really is remarkable. I mean, there are cancers today that are quite treatable, whereas 30 years ago, they were, you know, they're just terrible news to hear that you had it. As I said earlier, early detection has probably made the biggest difference. Our ability to do MRI and PET scanning lets us catch cancer at its earliest stage.
Mammograms, colonoscopy.
Exactly.
Listen
PSA
to your body.
Testing.
PSA testing. I just went in this week. Had to take blood for that. Absolutely. Yeah. Because I have four siblings that had four different types of cancer survivors. And you talk about curing for cancer, APL leukemia, highly curable. Right. I mean, think about the leaps and bounds that we've made with blood cancers.
Blood cancers are a great example. And, you know, every 5 years, we know that we're going to make real advances in certain cancers. But because cancer is not one disease, it's really hundreds of diseases, we've got a lot of work to do. And
I can't imagine what a day is like in your life. Where do you start? It's like, Jane, we're going in. We're going to cure cancer today. We're going to find something. I mean, God, it's crazy to think about.
You know, it's an extremely rewarding job I've got. I mean, I get the privilege of working with really motivated people. We've got incredible facilities. The H Foundation we were talking about earlier, it's friends like the H Foundation that give us a lot of the tools and resources that make us, put us in a position to do this work.
Right.
But it's hard work. You know, I mean, let me give you an example. One way we get a clue on cancer is, and this is what happens at the cancer center where we've got patients coming in, we may have 40 patients with a type of cancer that we still don't have a cure for. So we may want to genetically sequence each of those patients and then compare their genetic sequences to a population at large and ask, is there something different but common within this group? That's then the first clue that our basic scientists, our geneticists use to try to track down, okay, where is that difference in the DNA and what does it tell us? It usually tells us that there's a protein in those people that might be misfunctioning.
That protein. Sure. We always hear about the protein in this medical business.
Dr. Milan Mrkcic is in studio with us. I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, thehfoundation.org, Jane and I are a part of it. When people donate money and it goes to Lurie's Cancer Center, where does that money go? That's what we're going to talk about when we come back. It's 720 WGN. We put on a radio show every day. This guy goes to work and tries to find a cure for cancer. In studio with us is Dr. Milan Mrkcic. 312-981-7200 is our phone number, also our text line. Before the break, we talked about the HFoundation.org, just one of the foundations that gives to Lurie's Cancer Center. That money goes straight to research. What have you found out through the donations, or what has happened? What has you've discovered, I'm trying to say?
Sure. So, you know, one of the things in research today, we use really expensive, really cutting edge tools, technologies. And, you know, these things are at a scale where it's hard to buy them. It's hard to operate them. And it's hard to find the money from normal sources to do that. So the H Foundation, you know, one of the real benefits that we get is that we can use this money to bring in the most cutting edge piece of equipment and make it available to all of our researchers in the Cancer Center.
Oh, okay.
That's great. And expensive.
I mean, some of these things are millions of dollars, actually.
Wow.
And by having those tools, then we can have, you know, a jump start on figuring out, where do we go? How do we get a handle on this type of cancer, and how do we develop a treatment for it? The other thing that we do that's really important, you know, all of the research labs in the university, they're funded by the National Cancer Institute and other government agencies, among others. But they tend to fund, let's say, reasonably advanced ideas, ideas that you've already got some good support for. But the new ideas and somewhat crazy ideas can lead to the radical advances, and it can be hard to get funding for those at an early stage.
Because they're so radical?
Mm-hmm. They're so radical, yeah. They're new, and it's too easy to be critical of a new idea because there's no evidence for
it yet. Support, yeah.
And the H Foundation, a big part of those funds that they provide the center are used to test out these new ideas. And we know that lots of these new ideas won't go anywhere. But if 10% do, and they're the 10% that change the future for a group of patients, that made a real difference. And that's one of the, I think, the most special ways that the H Foundation support for what we do makes a difference.
Right.
Do you ever wake up in the middle of the night and go, ah, I have an idea. I have a new idea how to test this.
Well, I'll tell you.
I haven't tried this yet.
Jane, when I was younger, yes. Now I'm a little bit lazier, but I remember the idea. So when I do wake up in the morning, I have
that
reaction.
Yeah, you write it down. Yeah. Before you used to run to the lab at 2 a.m. You're like, oh, let me write this down. I got to go do it now.
Why does it take so long for cancer drugs to get approved in the United States? You hear about people going over to Europe or to Canada.
Yeah.
Why does it take so long?
You know, I mean, the process of really confirming that the drug works, you've got to test it in a lot of patients. And in fact, the way we start clinical trials, the first wave of patients aren't patients. They tend to be healthy young people that we're giving the drug to just to make sure that it's safe. And then we go to a group of patients and test to see whether it's working. That can take a couple of years to, you know, get enough of a of an observation period to know how much the drug has helped. And you've got to go through a few phases, phase one, phase two, and phase three. So it's not uncommon for trials to take several years. And the FDA is pretty good in terms of trying to accelerate the process when the drug would be the first drug available to treat a group of patients. But even then, it takes time. Other countries, not always, but in some areas, have, you might say, a lower bar, and so one can get through the testing process faster,
right?
Take that experience, those data, and then come back to the U.S. and use those data to help accelerate the process here.
Does that happen a lot?
Happens a fair amount, yeah. And because most drug companies are global, they really do they have to be. They've got to operate in Europe, here in Asia, and so they think about approvals globally.
What bothers you? Because we've talked about how we've made leaps and bounds with leukemia and breast cancer research. What is bothering you?
You know, for us, one of the real miracles in the past half dozen years have been immunotherapies. Antibodies, which are the natural molecules our body uses in our immune system, fighting off bacteria and viruses. And we've learned how to create antibodies that trick cancer cells. Cancer cells have this incredible ability oftentimes to turn off our immune systems. In a normal setting, as some of our cells are mutating and becoming cancerous, they don't grow because they get recognized by our immune systems and cleared, basically killed. But cancer cells then, they're smart. They evolve strategies to mask themselves from the immune system. And some of the drugs that we use it's kind of a cat and mouse game. Some of the drugs we use have then gone back at the cancer cell and prevented them from masking themselves from the immune system. And so these immunotherapies tend to work really well for blood cancers. They're not yet really effective for solid cancers, the kinds of cancers of our organs, pancreas, liver, brain, etc.
Right.
This is my passion. My passion is creating, re-engineering human antibodies to make them even more effective. So just to take an example, antibodies are Y-shaped molecules. The tips of the Ys are two sites that attach to cancer cells. We've learned how to make, I'd call them synthetic antibodies, where they have five or six arms.
Ooh.
So a much more stronger attachment.
Right.
And we think that's going to lead to better efficacy, better outcomes. And so for me, I'm just incredibly driven by this this vision that we can take nature's antibodies, re-engineer them and make them better.
Sure.
And get a leg up on cancer cells.
That's great. That's the best thing I've heard all year. It really is. Compare that to like people with stem cells, this big thing now.
Mm-hmm.
Do stem cells play a role anywhere in research for cancer, curing cancer?
They do. I mean, in a couple of ways. So stem cells in part are really exciting because they let us regenerate organs and tissue so that if you need to remove a tissue because it has cancer, stem cells could provide one strategy to get that organ back into a person. But it turns out that cancer uses stem cells in ways that aren't good for us. There are things called cancer stem cells.
Of course.
No.
And just
always finds a way, doesn't it?
Always finds a way. And so you may have 1% of the cancer cells, which are cancer stem cells, and if you're treating, if you remove 99% of the cancer, you may think that's really good. But if you haven't removed the stem cells, the cancer stem cells, they grow back.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to learn also, and this is, again, very recent work and really based on basic research, scientific insight. We're trying to figure out, can we develop therapies that go after the cancer stem cells because in principle, that's the population that you'd want to target.
Oh my God, my brain is spinning. Of course,
because it grows back.
I can't imagine. Well, it's just crazy.
I mean, yeah, the example, I think this in my head, my brother had a huge cancer tumor in his stomach, but it started growing. He had testicular cancer when he was 30, and who knows how he got the cancer, but it grew over 20 years, and then he had this big tumor. I thought he was just getting fat, and they went in for surgery and took it out, and then it continued to grow back. I'm assuming those were stem cells.
It's either the stem cells or they couldn't get all of it because they didn't know where the margins were, where it ended and normal tissue started. But this is, again, this is a good example. The story you just told is quite common.
Yeah, it is.
Depending where the cancer is and what type it is, somebody might think, you know, it's, you know, gained a little weight. Maybe I've got some kind of bump growing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all get that. And if you don't go in and get it checked out, you may not know. And so again, the idea of early detection, when you think something might be wrong,
something is wrong.
Listen to your body.
Listen to your body. We've always said that in our house. You got to listen to your body. Absolutely. And you got to have doctors too. You got to have your people.
You got to have some experts. That's right.
And if you don't have an expert, ask your friend for an expert, and ask your friend to ask a friend for an expert.
And it's Chicago. Always you're always one person away from somebody.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Can I ask you just, and this is not in the lines of research, but maybe it is. Have you ever, or do you ever consider, a lot of people do this holistic approach in addition to having, you know, being medically treated, but in the world of research, doing acupuncture or doing energy therapies in addition to being treated. Is there any research behind that?
There is, probably not enough to be candid. And, you know, we do know that there are real effects and there are placebo effects. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if somebody thinks they're getting a benefit, it actually helps. And we see that in drug trials all the time. When we test drugs in clinical trials, there's usually a group of patients, depending what the disease is, that would get a placebo, something that's not actual drug. And you always measure a benefit to that population. So we know that your brain is powerful. And if your brain thinks it's getting something that helps, your body can be helped.
Why not?
The biggest virtual reality machine there is our brains.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Amazing. Dr. Milan Mrkcic, thank you for coming in. It's great to see you.
Well, it's good to see you, Pete, Jane. Thanks for having me. And
we will see you at Goombe.
We'll see you at Goombe.
Yes.
Goombe Bash.
Can't wait.
Thanks to both of you, really,
absolutely,
for all you do. You've been great friends, great supporters of the Cancer Center and the H Foundation, and it makes a difference. And thanks for featuring us.
And just to let people know, the Goombe Bash is named after a drink. They were in the tropics or the Caribbean, and it was a Goombe drink, and they named it after this. And it's a gala where you show up in shorts and a Hawaiian shirt.
So fun.
You do not wear a suit, and everybody gets crazy. Definitely,
you know, so. It's fun. Everyone's there because they're passionate about cancer. They've been touched by cancer, but, you know, we figured out that we can have a fun night and we can do a lot to, you know, to help the future.
That's right.
Definitely.
Thank
so.
You. Fascinating stuff.
Thanks,
Thank
Doc. You. Good to see you. It's 720 WGN.
The numbers are in.
WGN Plus is where Chicago comes for podcasts.
Here's what's going on with WGN Plus. Technori always keeps up on innovation, but what do the old giants in the business world do to keep up? Mergers and acquisitions. Mason Vera Payne is yet again sneaking around and looking at our Google search trends, while Walter Jacobson is taking a minute to share his stance on why cable television is still important. Look him up. WGN Plus on iTunes and Google Play.
All right, that does it for us. Thank you for hanging out. Dr. Milan Mrkcic. Gosh, that guy was so good.
So impressive. He's smart.
Just so good.
Well spoken. He had an answer.